Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is Politics with Amy Walter from The Takeaway. All right, do you need a break? Maybe some TV? Luckily, there are countless political dramas and comedies to choose from. But with Washington, D.C. feeling a bit like a reality show...
They weren't laughing at me. They were laughing with me. We had fun.
Is there still room for political fiction, or are Americans feeling the fatigue? I sat down with some writers to find out.
You really can't surpass with fiction sort of the outrageousness and the sheer incredulity everyone feels about what's really going on now in Washington.
That's Paul Redford. He's worked on The West Wing, Designated Survivor, Alpha House, and Madam Secretary.
We hear a lot from our audience that they wished Washington worked the way it does on our show.
That's Barbara Hall, the creator of Madam Secretary.
It seems inexhaustible as a source of inspiration for people in at least the comedy piece.
And that's Gary Trudeau, the cartoonist behind the Doonesbury comic strip and creator of Alpha House. We got them all together and tried to get me an acting gig, or at least some answers as to why they think there's still a role for political fiction. And as Gary just hinted, comedy is one thing, but drama, well, that might be another.
There seem to be a very large, enthusiastic audiences for late-night comedy right now, which is just, you know, marinating in this stuff day after day after day. It seems inexhaustible as a source of inspiration for people in at least the comedy piece. Now, as far as drama or even dramedy, it gets a little trickier. The word is that almost nobody has had any success in trying to put together a show, a drama, that speaks to the current moment. I wrote a show recently about the Russians and the Russian interference and got nowhere with it.
Barbara, what about you? You have a show that's on network television in Madam Secretary. What has been the secret to your success? And are you feeling some of this pressure from either viewers and or the sort of suits in the business about political drama comedy?
No, not at all. Our show spanned the election. So we started one administration and then had to continue our story post-election. And so we've had kind of two different experiences. But the mission statement for this show in the beginning was that it was a place where we could talk about politics in a way that wasn't so polarizing, because even then the feeling was polarized. And so we didn't ever identify political parties in our show. It's a show about the State Department, of course, so it's about foreign policy. So we kind of found our way around that and really tried very hard for the first couple of seasons to make it a nonpartisan show. And, you know, then after the election, the climate changed. It was very different. We still struggled to talk about issues that weren't, you know, hot button issues or wedge issues. It was still about diplomacy. But then, you know, the rate at which things happened politically began to outpace us. We tried to stay a little ahead of it, and now we just can't. And now we also are in kind of an alternate reality because this election has never happened in our show.
It seems like the political shows sort of span one or the other side. It's either going to be this idealistic, aspirational.
And so I announce to you tonight that I will bring the full resources of the federal government and the full reach of my office to this fundamental goal. We will cure cancer by the end of this decade.
Or it's House of Cards and it's all just cynical and depraved.
For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy.
Or it's Veep and it's just so over-the-top ridiculous that we shouldn't take politicians seriously because they're all just buffoons.
All right, I gotta get going. I gotta go make noises out of my face hole or whatever it is I do.
Well, it seems part of the fun of House of Cards or Scandal or those shows was we all enjoyed them because we knew they were an exaggeration. And now everything in real life seems beyond exaggeration. You really can't surpass with fiction sort of the outrageousness and the sheer incredulity everyone feels about what's really going on now in Washington. So you can't use, you know, a satirist tool, which is to caricature and bring out the reality that way, because the reality already seems to be a caricature.
Of course, it's not the only tool in the toolkit. You know, hyperbole is just one. There's a whole lot of other ways in, as Saturday Night Live and Colbert and the others prove, you know, day after day.
I'd like to start by answering the question that's on everyone's mind. Yes, this is real life. This is really happening.
Which we tried to do in both shows that I was associated with, Tanner and Alpha House.
Please don't tell me this thing was staged.
I'm not saying that.
Good.
But I am saying we shouldn't say it wasn't staged.
Oh, God. This is real. Did you know? Wait, don't answer that. I can't afford a Washington lawyer.
I don't know anything about anything because there's nothing to know anything about. As far as I know. Right?
Right.
There are really two ways in for political shows. You can either try to insert your characters, your stories, your sensibility into the current reality and make them part of it. And that seems to be the way that I'm most suited to, just because I write the same way in the comic strip, so it's sort of intuitive for me. And the other way is to set up a parallel universe, and it can be evil, as in House of Cards, or it can be aspirational where most conflict is interpersonal and where the outcomes make you feel good, as West Wing often did. You always left cheering your favorite characters in West Wing. You know, it's not that one is a better approach, or they're just different approaches. And, you know, as I say, being actually in the game and having your characters players or pretend players where fiction meets nonfiction is kind of an interesting space for me.
Well, and Barbara, in your case, it's fictional, and then you have real live people like Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright and Colin Powell show up.
Listen, I won't take much of your time. I know that you all have other meetings. And
Elizabeth, there is no more important meeting for any of us than this one right now.
Well, I do appreciate that.
Tell us what the thinking is and why you bring in real people into a fictional world.
Well, we bring them in when it makes sense to the story we're telling, and also when it doesn't break the rules of our reality. For example, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, but hadn't run for president, so she can appear in her capacity as a former Secretary of State. But there are certain realities we can't break because, as I said, this election never happened. And, you know, and we've had to, this year especially, create some scenarios that parallel what's happening in the real world. These things that would never have happened under our president, we had to create a way to make them happen because the show was becoming, it just felt like a quaint period piece or something. It just, you know, if we didn't deal with some of these issues, you know, so we had to find ways to deal with the discussion of nationalism and family separation and the argument about climate change, because we couldn't just leave that out of our universe because it just felt too quaint.
The other problem with introducing real people into your show is that for the most part they're horrible actors, and you then in the early days you know, you'd see a politician like Tip O'Neill showed up in Cheers once, and they're so awkward, it's so painful.
Hey, you know, you look a little like Tip O'Neill.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people say that. Really, I'm a better looking fellow than he is.
Oh my God, you are Tip O'Neill. What are you doing here in Cheers?
Well, I'm walking down the street. A lady stopped me, started to tell me about her philosophy of life, her philosophy of government, and so I ducked in and thought I'd have a quick one.
They don't have that kind of timing and presence and all the whole skill set of actors. So what we found, because we did it quite extensively in Tanner, and Robert Altman liked to work very sort of spontaneously, and so we found that the way around that problem was to put them in situations where they were most themselves, and we wouldn't write script. I would describe a scene and where we wanted to be at the end of the scene. And then he was endlessly patient with just kind of letting these non-actors find their way through it.
With other people's ideas, he had Kennedy, he had Martin Luther King. Yep. I mean, where's his ideas?
Like Biden, instead of coming out and just plagiarizing. He's puts his old faces around
him. He's saying that ideas are his currency. Well, if that's his currency, then let's see the color of his money.
He's a lovely man.
That's all he is, as far as I'm concerned.
He's the perfect vice president.
If you give them direction to speak passionately about things they care about, or you give them a goal and just let them get there in their own way, we found that was better than with actual scripts. Now, having said that, I'm a total hypocrite because I did write all the lines for our our cameos in Alpha House, but I'm it's a different kind of show than Tanner was, which was sort of had a documentary feel to it.
That rule generally holds for politicians and sports figures that, you know, they take you out of the show. There is an exception, though, for news anchors and media figures. Very often we find no actor can really get the rhythm right or get the presentation right of actual newscasters.
Senator Smith, so much has changed since we last sat down. You'd just been reelected. And now you find yourself incarcerated.
It's not enough to win the nomination, but for him to win, President Underwood, he still needs these superdelegates.
He won the popular vote when Dunbar withdrew, but you're saying he doesn't have a technical majority.
The most inspiring choice for vice president, right? I mean, a well-respected operator, pragmatic. But let's face it, this is probably just a nod to Congress.
I think all of us find that actually if you can get a real media person in that role, it actually increases the believability.
It feels like Wolf Blitzer has held up his hand more than most. He's been in hundreds of things.
Everything he's in. He's in movies. He's in commercials. He's in... Yeah. So, I'm available. What's the pay scale kind of like?
There used to be a kind of firewall, and the networks were loath to let their news talent wander over into the other division. But I think that's long since gone away.
For those of us who live and breathe Washington, do you care what we think about your shows?
I know we did on West Wing. Which was, you know, at the time, West Wing was a real long shot. There was a rule, longstanding rule, you can't do politics on network television. And if you do, it's always some exaggerated conspiracy thriller where it's always the president's evil chief of staff and or it's the vice president. This is before that became true in real life.
And good on TV. I mean, Homeland's fantastic.
Yeah. So our first year of West Wing, we couldn't get any, we were able to talk to a lot of Washington insiders, but we could hear them rolling their eyes and saying, we're Hollywood and we won't get it right. But after we were on for a few episodes, I think a lot of sort of Beltway people woke up to the fact that, oh, they're really trying to get it right.
I work at the White House.
Wow. Humongous whoop.
Come on. He's communications director. It's a decent sized whoop. Tyler, no fooling around. We have 15 minutes to get to a plane that is 3 miles from here. That plane, I swear to God, is taking off at 1 o'clock.
It's taking off at 1?
Yes, it is.
Are you guys stupid or something? It's 1:45 right now.
It's 12:45.
No, not here. It's not.
Oh my God, she's right.
We changed time zones?
It's a common mistake.
Not for the U.S. government!
What a schmuck-ass system can this guy believe? What is this, a joke?
Serve my country!
Okay, this is a whole new thing now. My guys are going to need to walk this off a little bit.
People started to come around in a big way to the point where, Bill Clinton was pitching us story arcs.
What did he pitch you on?
I can't remember. It might have been a version of the thriller he wrote with James Patterson, or I don't know. You'd have to ask Aaron Sorkin because he filed it away. We probably used a version of it, but I can't admit that because then we'll have to put his name on it.
Alpha House is based on actual real-life members of Congress who do indeed share a house together, or did share a house together.
That's right. It was Dick Durbin and I think Schumer was actually part of that group.
That's
was sort of a rolling cast of characters.
Nothing went on at Brigham Young.
Ever.
Well, that's not what your old friend and teammate Van Pingree told me. He said that you guys had some pretty crazy times on the swim team.
Okay, I know what you're going after here, Shelby, so let's just get it out there. There were a couple of times, 5, 6 at the most, when just before a big meet, in order to get psyched up to give us an edge, Ben and I did coffee.
Coffee.
coffee. We did it black. I'm not proud of it.
Once I sort of committed myself to that project, I heard that there was a female version of it with congresswomen, and I thought, oh, that's so much more interesting.
Barbara, what about you? I mean, you're tackling some pretty sophisticated issues, and I'm wondering how often it is that you are talking with the insiders and people who are actually in, whether it's in Washington or specifically in the business of dealing with these geopolitical world issues.
We talk to them all the time. We work with a media group called Glover Park Group, and they are made up of people who are have worked in some form of policymaking in Washington. And we run everything by them. We talk all of the issues that we want to do through with them. We care very much what Washington thinks about it. The people who are doing these jobs think about whether or not we get it right. But we also want to make it entertaining. So we kind of walk the line of don't tell us what would happen, tell us what could happen. So we will basically come to them with, we want to do this foreign policy issue. What's the right country, and what would be the United States interest there, and what would be a great diplomatic solution? And
is that the biggest hurdle that you have, is folks in Washington are just a little too cautious? They aren't thinking in the same way that you are about, they need this really interesting story arc and they need it to be completed in 30 minutes, and, you know, that they're constantly saying to you, no, that just couldn't happen, or that wouldn't happen. What's the biggest pushback that you're getting when you're talking to folks in the business here?
We get some areas where they just say that's a non-starter, that would never happen. We recently, last year, we did a show about taking the nuclear arsenal off the hair trigger response. It's called de-alerting.
We've been on this posture for over 50 years. What else do we need to know?
What are you getting at, Beth?
Isn't the problem the policy itself? Being on hair trigger alert to order the destruction of the planet?
Like you said, it's worked for 50 years.
I didn't say it's worked. It's more like we've been lucky.
The Russians are on ready alert, too. What choice do we have but to counterbalance?
De-alert our silos.
And some of the guys that we talk with are former Pentagon guys, and they're just like, no, nobody's interested in that. It's a non-starter. That's not even a discussion. And, you know, we just kept pushing because in our world, it could be a discussion. We are an aspirational show. Let's show people what it would look like if you could get any of the, you know, nuclear. So there is a paradigm. We can say, well, why can't we use this model? And so we get them to follow us into our aspirational fantasy of doing something that seems to them impossible, but they can talk us through what it would look like if we could get this to happen.
And was there something that seemed impossible to happen pre-2016 that you've actually written about this?
Well, I was just thinking. I mean, this is always a barrier when writing these political shows, is you get shut down by saying, well, no, that's just beyond the bounds of reality. But now, you know, reality has exceeded those bonds. In Designated Survivor, we were trying to find, you know, a way to highlight Natasha McElroy, who played the president's wife, and give her a bigger role. So, well, why not have her appointed, you know, attorney general, just like JFK appointed his brother? Oh, no, that could never happen. There's now, you know, a clear, bright line between members of the president's family and government. And, you know, a year later, we saw that just blown all to heck, along with a lot of other things. The new normal, there's no normal now. So I think it does give us license, but it also makes our jobs harder because, as Barbara said, in normally in television, you're confined in writing political shows of stories that can only take 24 hours or 3 days. And before now, government operated on a much slower pace. But now you see every day the headline is changing. Every day some earth-shaking event is superseded by another earth-shaking issue designed just to make you forget the last earth-shaking issue. Reality, again, is more on a television rhythm now than ever before.
So is that good for business then?
I don't think it's good for our business so much. Our selling points are kind of going away. We have to compete with the sensationalism of what's really going on.
It's really good for our business. It's a golden age. You know, Trump has been baked into our business plan for the last 3 years, and you just it's the gift that just keeps giving.
Can you all talk to us about the partisanship of your viewers and whether that's something that you know about or think about?
Well, we think about it a lot. I mean, as I said, when the show began, the idea was to be able to invite everyone to the discussion. And because, again, we're a State Department show and we're talking mainly about foreign policy, and really we are a problem-solving show. We create these issues in foreign countries and then, show the solutions to these situations. So people are sort of engaged in fixing the problem and not paying attention to some hot-button issue. And because we avoid domestic issues almost entirely, we don't have to get into a lot of things that are so-called wedge issues. There are a couple of issues that we take on that people take umbrage at, but for the most part, they, you know, hang in there to, again, as Gary was saying, they're invested in these characters, and they will kind of go with them through their jobs and even disagree with them a little bit because they are interested in seeing how they do their jobs.
Our audience wants to see people doing well, and that's what makes them heroic, not what party they're for.
Delete vigorously from the first sentence.
Which paragraph?
3, Section 7.
We're not going to vigorously pursue campaign finance reform?
No, we're just going to pursue it regularly.
Not vigorously.
Not tonight. McGowan says we're fine. He feels the word vigorous is inflammatory. Change chokehold to tight grip.
Is that it?
Yeah.
No, Sam's still on.
We got like 4 minutes, Toby.
Where are we?
Sam's still on.
Bob Novak just said this was the speech of my political life. You know how many times I've heard that?
I was always surprised because West Wing has always been held up as a, you know, classic kind of liberal fantasia. How many conservatives and Republicans are still big fans of the show and come up to
really?
Me and tell me, yes, memorized whole episodes, Congress people. And what they were watching for is just watching a politician of whatever stripe be very good and have ideals. And certainly on both sides, Lawrence O'Donnell on our show always said this, nobody sets out to be a bad guy in politics. They all have their reasons. They all believe they're doing right and they're doing good. Everybody wants to see someone doing that. And you can put a label on it or, as Barbara said, you can be very artful about not putting labels on it. You still feel you're watching a government the way you want it to see run.
Do you guys ever think in the future, like, okay, if I'm writing, if I'm thinking 10 years from now, I'm going to write a show about this era? You know, maybe you can't write about, as we discussed earlier, maybe you can't write necessarily about some of the issues we're tackling right now, whether it's Russia or whether it's, you know, this current president. But 10 years from now, what do you think the shows are going to look like that talk about this era?
I still think the Russians are a great story that someone's going to tell, if not me. and maybe 10 years from now, it'll be safe to go back to them. I did have a fascinating conversation with one executive who will remain nameless. And she said, that we can't possibly do a show about Russians because we're hoping that our programming, you know, we're in talks with the Russians about our programming being there. And I said, what? You've got 100 movies that feature Russians as the bad guys, and like really bad guys. Mm-hmm. And you're worried about a show about, you know, Russian hackers?
I think the other interesting show that could come out of this era is a very interesting legal show, which is this is the era where it was tested whether or not we are a country of laws and what that looks like. And, we're sort of living through that right now, the testing the how it all works through the legal system, both on a local and federal level. So there could be an interesting law show in there.
Barbara, Gary, Paul, you guys have been great. Thank you for sharing all of your insights and your wisdom and, of course, the humor.
It was fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that was fun. And you know what? If Wolf and Rachel Maddow and John King can do these cameos, why can't I? What do you think? Should I try out for a Madam Secretary gig? If you think so, go ahead, tweet at them. They're at Madam Secretary. Oh, and another thing, about that Indiana time zone from the West Wing.
Time zones?
It always bugged me that a Democratic White House was spending time in Indiana, a deep red state, just days before the election. That's just preposterous. if we were to update this for the modern era, we'd put Josh and Toby and Donna in Arizona, where they forgot that the state doesn't recognize daylight savings. It's all yours, Sorkin. You can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Amy E. Walter, and the show is At The Takeaway. Before I let you go, I wanted to give you a heads up. There won't be a new podcast next week, but lucky for you, there are two out today. That's right, two for the price of one. So get both podcasts, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Amy Walter. This is The Takeaway.